We're holding on Mem Dalet on the days by the Mishnah at the bottom. Mishnah says, "Hoya rokin from base a skila arba amos." Once this person who's about to receive skila is 4 amos away from the base of skila, from the edge, mafshitino, he says, "Begodav," they strip him of his clothing. We learned at the beginning of the parak from a limud from the word oisoi that he has to be given skila. Him, that meant, we said that meant beloik susoi, without his clothing. So that's why they do that. Ha'ish machasin oisim elafanav. If it's a man, then they keep him covered in his front. They have his erva covered. Va'isha malfaneo me'achareha. A woman is covered from in front and behind. So basically, you're talking for both of them. You have something like a loincloth to cover their erva. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. The Chum say a man is stoned without his clothing, like we just said, but a woman not, as we're going to learn in the Gemara the details of why that's so. So the Gemara says Tana Rabbanan. We learn in a Braisa. Let's talk about more detail about that. A man, when they strip him of his clothing before the skila, they cover him one perek in front of him. Rashi explains the word perek basically means a small amount. A segment. So it can mean a segment of his clothing, or it can mean a segment, a piece of cloth that's used to cover him. Whatever the case, it's one piece. The isha shnei perakim, a woman, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is going to be covered with two, bein milfaneha, bein milachareha, one in front of her, one behind, because she's all erva, in the sense, in other words, that her erva, her actual private parts, would be visible from in front or from behind, and therefore we need to cover from behind as well. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. And then, as the Chacham said in the Mishnah, only a man is stoned without his clothing, a woman not. So, my time, my Rabbanan. Why did the Chachamim hold that way, that there would be a difference between men and women? Now, you're going to say the obvious difference is because of matters of tznius, but we're going to get into that. We're going to get into that as we go through the discussion. So, Omar Kra. The Chacham say, because the Pasuk says, the Pasuk says they should stone him. We said that we learned a few days ago that it says that in connection with the Mekalel at the end of Parashas Emor. Now my oisoi. Now, why is it saying oisoi in the masculine? It could have just said verogmu kolaida. They should stone. Who else are they going to stone? Ilema oisoi veloi oisa. Are you going to say that it means as a mute? So obviously the word oisoi is some kind of mute. Are you going to say it's a mute that it means not? It means only him but not her. Meaning a woman is not chayiv skila in the first place. No, v'haksiv, the pasuk says elsewhere, talking about people who worship Avodah Zarah, v'hoitzei ser sa isha hu oyes isha ahi, you should take out that man or that woman, and the pasuk goes on to describe that you give them skila. And in general, we have the rule from that and from a couple of other psukim, we learn the concept hishva kos of isha leish l'chol oinshin and l'chol loises esh b'torah. That in general, when it comes to all, almost all loises says in the Torah, and when it comes to all the punishments in the Torah, men and women are equally chayiv in them. So the word oisa is clearly not excluding women from skila altogether. Ella, so therefore we have to say my oisa b'loy k'susay aval oisa b'k'susa. So rather, the miut must be that we're saying that only he is by himself, implying without his clothing, whereas she not. So it comes out from Rashi, in other words, basically, we're saying that we're learning two things from this word oisoi. We're learning that with a man, it's him without his clothing, but we're also learning from it that it means that the oisoi specifically has that din, but not oisa. So according to Rashi, we're actually learning the two things from the one word. Tosfos actually learns differently. They say that no, you can't really use the same pasuk for two different limudim. It's rather more a logical thing, as the Gemara is going to go on to say. There's two issues with having her be below k'susa, and therefore because of that is why we understand. So it's not an actual miut from the pasuk. It's almost more like an asmachta from that. That for reasons for the two reasons that the Gemara is going to discuss soon, we shouldn't have oisa below k'susa. Okay. Well, the question, so that's according to the Chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Oisai, Beloik Susai. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, listen, the Pasuk says Oisai means him, and that means only him without his clothing. So he would say, Loishna Ish, Loishna Isha. So listen, he says, I don't hold that there's a miut in the word Oisai, that it means not Oisa. It doesn't matter. Either way, there's no particular miut. And since, again, Hishva, Kosav, Isha, 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 whatever, the Torah equates men and women as far as the missus in the Torah, why should you say? says Rabbi Hoda, that the procedure here for a woman should be any different than a man. Okay, well, the Gemara asks, now it seems that the Chachamim are concerned about hear her. You're going to have this woman standing in front of them shortly before the skila, undressed. Then it's going to cause people to have hear her. The Aruch HaNer explains. Now, we just finished saying, according to the Chachamim, they're learning from a Mir to the Pasuk, but nevertheless, fine, the Pasuk might be saying they can do whatever they want. By a man, it has to be Arum, it has to be without clothing. By a woman, they have their choice. Well, then the question is, according to the Chachamim, we would say, so fine, that we could explain it that it means that it has to be Aruma, but we could equally well say not. The Chachamim were saying, therefore, are choosing to do it not Aruma, but rather that she's wearing clothing. Well, in that case, it must be more logically that they're concerned about the matter of hear her, that she's going to be standing over there in that state, and it's going to cause people to have thoughts of znus. So it seems like the Chachamim are concerned about that, whereas Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned about that, and therefore he says what he says. The problem is,
specifically it means
without clothing, says Rabbi Yehuda, right. The problem is that we find Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim saying exactly the opposite in a different case. The Tanan, we learn in Soita. So you have the Soita is being brought to the Bais Hamikdash, and the whole ceremony, the whole procedure of the Soita is going to be done with her. Now, the Pasuk says, Ufaras Roisha Isha, that the Kohen has to uncover her hair, like this, she's wearing a tikkul or a shetel, and the Kohen removes it. But in addition, the Mishnah goes on to say, and the Gemara learns it there from Sukkim, that also parts of her body have to be exposed. And the expression in the Mishnah is, a Kohen uchas bivgadeha, the Kohen grabs a hold of her clothing and he starts pulling. Im nikru nikru, if it rips, it rips. Vim nifrumu nifrumu, and if it gets tattered, then it gets tattered. Rashi explains that what it means is nikru would be a normal kind of rip in two. Nifrumu, tattered, would be like into little pieces, into little tiny shreds. That's one way. There's different other explanations that we've shown him have. The Oruch brings an explanation that nikru would be along a seam, and nifrumu would be or the other way around. Nikru would be the actual clothing itself, the actual fabric itself ripping. Nifrumu would be along a seam. That's the Oruch brings that. And then there's a different explanation that some of the Foshim have. Nikru would mean vertical, nifru would mean horizontal. Whatever the case, the point is the Kohen has to rip her clothing. Because since the Pasuk says Ufara Esroisha Isha, we learn from that. The Gemara says it means not only her hair, it means also part of her body. Ad Shemagala Esliba, until he uncovers her heart, meaning her chest. Vesoyser Esara, and then he also undoes her hair. He takes off whatever it is that she's covering her hair with and undoes her braids or other hairdo like that. The point is that this way she suffers this tremendous bizoyan in front of everybody. The Gemara is going to point out soon that there's a practical reason behind it. It accomplishes something as far as other people learning to not act like she did. But in addition, also, it's Xeris HaKosov, that's how it has to be. However, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, by the way, the Yerushalmi brings up the point, don't we have to be concerned about the Kohen himself having Hirhurim? And the answer is basically that, so the Yerushalmi says actually where possible they would get an old Kohen to do it, so he's less subject to Hirhur. But in addition, it also brings that they would make a girdle, and look, whichever Kohen the girdle lands on, as we learned the other day, in connection with Achon, a girdle is a very important thing. So whoever it is, even if it's the Kohen Gadol, he's going to come and do this. Anyway, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, im hoya liba na la hoya megalehu, Rabbi Yehuda says if her chest was attractive, he wouldn't uncover it. And if her hair is attractive, he wouldn't uncover it or disarray it or whatever. So we see, therefore, because the problem is that the Kohenim, they're not going to have hear her avera. So the problem is, so there, Rabbi Yehuda is concerned about hear her, and the Chachamim are not, and here it's the other way around. So the Gemara answers, Omer Rabba Hosam Hainu Taima. The problem is over there, by the Sota, Shema Tetzim based in Zakah. After all, she may come out innocent. By the Sota, it's not a 100% thing that she's going to blow up and die. She may, after all, be innocent. V'nixa v'nizra zara. And v'yisgara v'pircha kohuna. Now she's walking around there. She's leaving the Bais HaMikdash uncovered like that, partially uncovered like that. And the young Kohenim are going to see her and they're going to be attracted to her and it's going to create problems. Whereas over here, she's getting killed, so nobody's going to be able to be attracted to her in a few seconds. She's going to be dead anyway. So you're going to say so. All that means is that then he's going to have a hear her about, he's going to see her, and that's going to cause him to have a hear her about other women. No, Omar Rabba, because Rabba also says, Gmiri, we have the Kabbalah, Ein Yetzahara Sholet Ela B'Misha Ein Avroyas. The Yetzahara has ability, has domination only over the one that he sees with his eyes. So meaning, in other words, if he were to see this particular woman again, then yes, it would give him Hirhurim towards that, and it would cause him to, it would motivate him to try and pursue her and whatever. But now we're saying this particular woman is dead, and now we're going to say it's going to cause him Hirhurim about other women, not necessarily. Tosfos actually points out that there is an exception to that. The Gemara mentions in Megillah that a person would say, the person with Rochav was so beautiful that you would say her name twice, and already a person would have Hirhurim from that. But the Gemara says there, Yodo Makira, that's Taka, where he knows her on a personal level. So then, and there's even an explanation over there, Yodo Makira means that he's actually previously had relations with her. So then in that case, then in that case, it could have this effect on him. But here we're talking about he doesn't know this woman from before. He just now he's watching her. Now he's watching her have given skilla. So therefore it's not going to so and she's not Rochav after all. So there's not such a problem. Okay. So far, so good. But Omar Rava, Rabbi Huda. So that explains it in short. So Rabbi Huda is saying where she's going to be killed and she's not going to survive the whole thing anyhow, then it's not a problem. But in the case of the Sota, she may survive it. Well, Omar Rava, Rabbi Huda, Kasha, Rabbanan, like Kasha. Okay, but are you telling us that there's only a contradiction within what Rabbi Huda says? What about you also have to deal with... You also have to deal with the contradiction in the Chachamim, where there it's the other way around. They're saying, by all means, go and uncover her by the Sota, whereas over here they're saying that she has to remain covered. So how are you reconciling that? Ella Omar Rava. So Rava says, fine, we can work with what we have so far. Fine. Rabba's explanation of the difference in Rabbi Huda's opinion explains things very well. Drabbanan, Lami like Kasha, as far as the Chachamim's opinion, here, it's also not a problem. Omar Kra, because you have a Pasuk that says, V'nivastru kol anoshim v'loy sa'asena kezimaschena. The Pasuk says, all the women will be chastised by seeing what happens to you, and they won't act like you're znus. The context is a long nevuah of Yechezkel, where he compares the Jewish people, as many of the Nevi'im do, to a wife who went astray and was unfaithful to her husband. So then the Yechezkel goes and describes very graphically how she's going to be punished. And he finishes off with much further along, he says this pasuk that you're going to be chastised, you're going to be punished so severely that everybody will learn to not act that way. So Rashi explains, in other words, the point is that with the Sota, the fact is she did act in a pritzistic way. How is she a Sota? Because her husband told her, don't be alone with this guy, and she went and did that anyway. Fine, maybe they weren't actually Mizana, but nevertheless, we still want women to take a lesson from it and don't act that way in the future. So we need to humiliate her to the maximum in order, in fact, the Mishnah mentions over there, and the Gemara explains that any women who are there in the Azara are obligated to come and view and watch. Men can watch if they want to, but the women have to in order that they should take an object lesson from her. Hocha, over here, you don't need that. There's no greater vinivasru from the fact that she's getting killed. So therefore, there's no need to further humiliate her by uncovering her. So the Gemara says, "V'chitei levet batarti." So you're going to say, "Okay, we don't need to, but maybe we should still do that. Maybe we should still put the maximum possible embarrassment on her." No, Omer of Nachman, Omer Rav Bavua, Omer Krov Yahafta L'Recha Kamoicha. The pasuk says you should love your fellow yid as yourself, and that means Broloi Misa Yafa. Means when you're executing, even when you have to execute another yid, find for him the best possible misa. As we learned yesterday, Yisrael Af Bishachati Yisrael. Who he may be a sinner, he may be whatever, but nevertheless, you still have to have Avas Yisrael for him. In fact, the Yad Ramah says, you know, when we say V'yahavta lo reyacha kamoicha, we can darshan the word reyacha as if it was roacha, your evil one, and he's chayav misa. And nevertheless, you have to have Avas Yisrael for him. So Tosfos points out another reason why to say that. Why would we apply davka to the execution of a condemned criminal? Tosfos says a couple of things. First of all, what do you mean we have to l'recha kamoicha? The fact is, we have cases where your own self preservation takes precedence over another yid's life. You have the famous case. You have the famous case where two people are in the desert and they only have enough water for one of them to make it to civilization. And the din is, you have Machlokas ben Ptura and Rabbi Akiva elsewhere in Shas, and the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva chayecha kodmin. So you can't say across the board that you always love the other yid as yourself. If it was as yourself, you'd be obligated to offer him the water. As opposed to over here, you can say it really is. You're fully mekayim in the sense that, listen, the guy's taka going to be dead. You have a mitzvah to do that. But nevertheless, you have to do misa yofa. Then Tosfos says another reason is because, let's look at the is the middle of a pasuk. It starts by saying, don't take nekama and don't have a grudge against a fellow yid. So we usually understand, Rashi mentions on the pasuk, nekima is you say, you did this bad thing to me, therefore I'm doing this bad thing back to you. Netira is you say that you did this bad thing to me, but here I'm going to do this good thing for you anyway, and I'm not like you. And the Torah saying don't do either of those things. But the word nekima, in addition, has a meaning in halacha of executing somebody. Nokim yinokim. We say a person kills his eved kanani, then he's chayiv misa. And we learn from the word nokim yinokim. We're going to learn in the next parak that it means that he gets skila. No, that he gets hereg rather. That he has his head chopped off for that. So therefore, when the pasuk says lois sikoim, it's referring to a case where there's misas based in involved. And still, the pasuk is saying ve'hafta l'recha kamaycha. So therefore, since it says ve'ahavta l'recha kamocha, we can't put on her any more embarrassment than necessary. Well, the Gemara says lema de Rav Nachman Tanoi. Well, in that case, it seems that not all the Tanoim agree with what Rav Nachman is saying because about ve'ahavta l'recha kamocha. Because it sounds like Rav Yehuda doesn't pay any attention to that, and he's saying, no, I don't care. Take off her clothing. Let her be maximum embarrassed, and we don't worry about that. And the answer is loy. The kula alma islahu de Rav Nachman. No, everybody, the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda both agree with Rav Nachman's point, but they have a different way of looking. What is the misa yofa in this case? V'hocha b'hocha mifugi. The fundamental machlokas here is as follows: Mar sova bizyoni de inish adifalei tvei. Marsova, the Rachacham hold, bizyoyne de inish, the public humiliation that a person might have to undergo, adifalei tfei is more serious to him, is more of a factor to him, minicha de gufe, more than comfort of his body. You think about it like this. If the person is given skila, and as we're going to say in the next mission, he's thrown off a platform twice his height, where the idea should be that the fall is enough to kill him, but if he's wearing clothing, that's going to cushion the fall and make it less likely that he's going to die on the spot from that. And then we're going to have to go with the rest of the procedure, as we're going to learn in the next Mishnah, where their heavy stone is dropped on him, etc. So now you might argue, so you have two factors over here. There is bizoyan, public bizoyan of being undressed, but there's also, on the other hand, nicha de gufe. On the other hand, it makes it that there's more comfort for his body because he's more likely to die on the spot. So therefore, so which one is more of the misa yafa? So the Chacham say that the bizoyan has greater weight to a person than nicha de gufe. Yes, it means that if she's wearing clothing, then it's going to cushion her fall. There may be more physical yisurim from it, but nevertheless, she'd rather that rather than be humiliated in public by being undressed. Or Mar Savan Nicha de Gufe, or if mi bizyoni, whereas Rabbi Yehuda holds that the physical comfort, the fact that she'll die faster, is more important than the bizoyan, and therefore let's have her undergo the bizoyan, and that way at least it's more likely that she'll die quicker. So now once we have that consideration, then we're saying that again. So we are doing v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, but which one is more of the v'ahavta l'recha kamocha? That's the machlokas. The halacha is like the chachamim. The Rambam paskins. So therefore, so a woman is different than a man in that regard. The Rambam paskins that the woman wears choluk echad. She wears like one long shirt. Because again, you obviously don't want her wearing many layers of clothing. That are again, then you're going to have the problem. It really is going to cushion the fall. So therefore, she wears the minimum amount that it'll completely cover her body, and there won't be the bizoyan. But on the other hand, that's still the impact is still likely to have its effect. Mishnah says, The place of the skillet, the platform off which the person would be thrown, was two persons' height tall. Meaning you take the average height of a person, double it, and that was the height of this, that was the height of this platform or cliff. In various places, the Gemara mentions that a person's height is 3 amos. It's actually a machlokas. It's actually a machlokas who's showing him. Does that mean 3 amos head to toe, or over the average person, or does it mean 3 amos up to the shoulders? The idea, for example, we say mikveh is three by 1 amos. The theory is, though, on the other hand, a person goes into the mikveh, they displace the water, and therefore the water will cover the head, which sticks out beyond the 3 amos. This comes up also. For example, we say 4 amos is the place of a person, which is negiah to Hilchos Shabbos. Doesn't mean because the full height of the person, head and all, is 4 amos, so it doesn't mean their full height is three, but then they stick out their arms above their head, and there's the fourth amma. It could very well be, by the way, you know, we have the famous two main shittas on the size of the amma, 18 or 24 inches, 18 according to the Avraham Chaim Na, 24 according to the Chazon Ish. Could be that ultimately those reflect those two different understandings in the Rishonim. If you say that an amma is 18 inches or 18 or 19 inches, like Avraham Chaim Na, you're not going to say an average person is 3 amas tall. That would be only like 4.5 feet, four feet 6 inches, 4 feet 9 inches, or something like that. So then, more logical to say that a person's height is actually 4 amas, which would bring it up to around 6 feet. On the other hand, if you say with the Chazon Ish that an amma is two and an amma is 2 feet, you're not going to say a person is 4 amas tall. That would make him 8 feet tall. So then, it's more likely to say that 3 amas is the actual height of the person. Whatever the case, so then we double that, and we have the height of the platform. Echad mina edim doichvay al masnam. Now, one of the edim goes and pushes him from his waist. And the idea is that he'll fall. The idea is that he's pushing him from the back, so he'll fall face down. There are actually different understandings among the Rishonim. What is it exactly? Is it that we want him to fall on his face, or is it that, fakir? Maybe we want him to fall on his side or on his back. So there's several different explanations of why it is. An interesting point is why Dafka 1a does that, given that the Pasuk says, Yada Edim Tia Bobo Rishona Lahamisa, the Pasuk says, the hands of the Edim in plural should be against him, so why don't we have both Edim push him? The Aruch HaNer explains, we're going to learn in the Gemara soon, on Omid Beis, that when it comes to two people, it's very difficult to coordinate to the microsecond that they're both doing it at the same time. You know, you think of in last week's parasha, you have where with Makas Shechin, where Moshe and Aaron are each supposed to take handfuls of soot, and then Moshe is supposed to throw it up to Shemayim, and then Rashi makes the point over there, it can't be in Moshe's two cupped hands, because even the two hands of one person, it's very difficult to coordinate like that and throw it with maximum force. It has to be that he's throwing it with one hand, and therefore it was tremendous nisim that 4 handfuls of soot fit in Moshe's one hand. Anyway, the point is, by the same token, if the two Edim are going to do the thing together, they might each way, one might be pushing a fraction of a second before or after the other one, and then it's not going to be with maximum force. So therefore, we want one of them to do it, and that way it is. And then, as far as the fact that the second aid has to be involved, for that we're going to have what happens with the big stone that they throw on him if necessary. So you push him from the back. Nepachaliboy. If he turns and he's facing and he's on his heart, meaning he's face down, then you turn him over so he's on his back. Now Rashi explains that when he's lying prakton, his meguna yoser is more of a disgrace to him. Now there's a machloekas in a number of places in Shas what prakton means. Does it mean face up or does it mean face down? Rashi himself always explains that prakton means lying face up. So therefore, so it's a bigger disgrace for him. Wait a minute, what we just said? We have to learn echa kamocha. So the Shavuos Yaakov deals with this, and anyway, also the question is that we have to turn him on his back for a different reason, because we have to see if he's dead, first of all, but second of all, if not, then we have to throw the big rock on him, which is the next part of the procedure. So the Shavuos Yaakov deals with this at some length, and he asks and he prefers the Rambam's explanation, which is the Rambam Taka says that what it means is that That means we want him Davka to fall on his front in the first place. And then once he fell on his front, then, which is more likely to kill him faster, then we turn him over to see if he's dead and to see if we're gonna put the stone on him. So the Shavuos Yaakov is saying that maybe Rashi learns like that as well. When Rashi's saying that lying Pratar is a bigger disgrace, he's saying, so why, if we're going to turn him face up anyway, why don't we, to begin with, throw him in such a way? Why don't we push him from the front so he falls face up? And the answer is because that would be a greater gnai for him. So you could learn Rashi that way. But the Oruch HaNeir gives a different explanation. That Rashi's saying that when it says where they push him from Mosnov, means actually they push him from the side. So Rashi is saying you want him on his side, and that way it'll be a compromise. It won't be as much of a gnai for him as it would be if he's lying pracht on face up. But on the other hand, you'll also be able to then continue with the next step, see if he's dead, and continue from there. Anyway, so the Mishnah continues. So the Mishnah says, Nepahalibo, if you turn on his heart, then you turn him up, then you turn him over, you turn him on his back. So again, that can mean to begin with, we make an effort for him to fall face down, and now we turn him right side up, now we turn him face up so we can continue. Or it means to begin with we have him fall on his side and then we turn him face up. Now at that point, if he dies from the fall, yotza, then we yotza, based in, has accomplished the mitzvah. Each of the four mitzvahs based in, by the way, is a mitzvah esse in itself. There's a mitzvah esse to give a person skila when he deserves it. There's a mitzvah esse to give a person srefa when he deserves it, etc. So it means that based in was now yotza their mitzvah. And it means the person himself was Yotze, and now, as we learned before, he had Mrs. Bastin, and that's his kapara, and then he has his kapara, actually, as we're gonna learn later on in the perek. So, and if not, Asheni Noitel Se'evan, the second aid takes a stone, V'noisne Al-Libo, and throws it, and then Noisne, that means he puts it, but it actually means he drops it from that same height, Al-Libo, on the guy's chest. So as we said before, the Oruch HaNeir explains you have, of the two Edim, Reuven is the one pushing him, because again, you can't have Reuven and Shimon doing it, because then they may not be so coordinated. And now, Reuven, having done that, then if he's still alive, Shimon is the one who now is Mekayim, the other part of Yada Edim Tia Beba Rishona, and then drops the stone on him. Im mesbo yotza, if he dies from that stone being thrown on him, being dropped on him, yotza, then we yotza, v'im lav, and if not, rigimosi b'chol Yisrael, then everybody joins in stoning him and pelting him with stones. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, yada edim tia bo b'rishon ha'amisai, the hands of the edim should be against him first to kill him, v'yad kolom b'achrona, and everybody else's hands further on, so we see that there is a stage of it where everybody else participates. But first it has to be the Edim. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Tana, we learn in a Braisa, when we say that the platform has to be double the height of a person, the koima shaloi. Now, in addition, you have the person is standing up. They don't throw him off from a seated or lying position. He's standing up. Harei kan sholosh. So therefore the total height of the fall is three times his height. So in other words, his head hits the ground from a height three times his own. So the Gemara asks him, Miba in and Kula high, why do we need such a high elevation to throw him off from? Wouldn't a lower elevation also potentially kill him? Uraminu, I have a contradiction. We learn in the Mishnah in Bava Kamma that the Mishnah mentions over there that Echad Bur, Echad Shiach, that when you say you have the dinim of a shur or chamur falling into a bur and then getting killed or injured, that the owner of the bur is chayav to pay. And the Mishnah says, given that it applies not just to a bur, which is a round cistern, but other shapes as well, why does the Pasuk say bur specifically? Ma bur shukre l'homis asara tfachim, just like a bur is ordinarily 10 tfachim deep, and that's considered enough to kill. The same way any other shape of ditch or pit also has to be a minimum of 10 tefachim deep in order for the owner of the burr to be chayev for the death of the animal. Meaning, in other words, if the burr, as we learned in Bava Kamma, if the burr is only 9 tefachim deep, for example, then even if the animal gets killed falling into it, we say basically that's a freak accident. We can't be chayev the owner of the burr for the death of the animal, because normally only 10 tefachim would be enough to kill. But the point is, again, we see 10 tefachim should be enough to kill, and 10 tefachim is only 1 amma and 4 tefachim, whereas here we're saying a minimum of 6 ammas. The answer is Omar of Nachman, Omar Rav, Omar Kral. Like we said before, we have to learn Echa Kamecha, Brole Misa Yafa. We want to be able to choose the best possible death for him. If you throw him from off only 10 tefachim, he might be killed, but he might not, and then he's going to be injured, and then he's going to be in pain over there. So you want a height which is tall enough, which is high enough to almost certainly kill him. Now, granted, it may not. We said in the Mishnah that he may need the extra procedures, but still, we want it at least that there's a high likelihood that it will kill him. By the way, I think there was an explanation in Mefarshim that the reason why did the Torah do this? Why Taka make it this multi-step process is because to a certain extent, what ends up happening to the guy depends on his degree of Aveda. You can have, even within a person did an Aveda, amazing. There's Eidim Vahasra, the whole 9 yards, but nevertheless, within that, there can be different degrees of how amazing he was. So therefore, in keeping with that, will be how much he ends up having to undergo. Is it just the fall, or is it also the big stone, etc.? No, in other words, not that based in themselves would evaluate, but in other words, the Eibishter makes it happen. If he was mazed, but still there's like mitigating circumstances in the Eibishter's eyes, then you're going to have, he'll arrange that he'll die right away from the fall. And if he's more guilty, then the Eibishter will arrange that he still survives the fall and needs the big rock, etc. Anyway. So therefore, you want Misa Yafa, so therefore you want a higher elevation. Okay, the Gemara says, Yehochi Lig Behe Tvei. Well, in that case, let it be even taller than that. And the answer is Mishum de Minaval. But if it's too tall, then the body is likely to break apart when it falls. That would be a nivel, that would be a disgrace to the body. And again, Misa Yafa means you don't want that. You want it to fall, his body should still be intact, but you want it to be killed. So therefore, so having a height double his height, plus he's standing, which makes that third height, that strikes a balance between those two things and makes it miss a yofa as much as possible. Okay? We said in the Mishnah, Echad min ha'edim doichvoy, we said one of the edim pushes him, then we said you have this three part process, the pushing, and if he dies from that, then that's enough to be yod to the mitzvah, and so forth. So the Gemara says, Tanan Abanan, Minayin Shebedechia. How indeed do we know that skila involves pushing him off a height? I mean, after all, skila on the face of it means pelting him with stones. So actually the context of this braisa, Rashi explains, is actually talking about we're going to quote the posik before Matan Torah, that anybody who goes up to Har Sinai, soko yi soko or yora yi yora, he will be stoned or he will be thrown off. Now, when we learn this posik as kids, we usually understand it means it's something like bidei shemayim. Anybody who comes onto Har Sinai when they're not supposed to, the Eibishter is going to cause him to have an avalanche, is going to fall on him, or he's going to fall off. The braisa is understanding that it means he's actually chayav misas beis din. They're literally going to take the person to beis din and judge him and execute him for having been over on this aveda. And the Torah says, that he'll be thrown off yora yora. Ominayin shabaskila. And how do we know that there's also skila involved, pelting him with stones? Tamad lema sokol, because the pasuk says sokol. Ominayin shabaskila uvedechia. How do we know that it means both and it's not one or the other? Tamad lema sokol yisokol o yora yiyora. That's why you have the double lushin. Stone, he will be stone. Thrown, he will be thrown. So in other words, if it was only one or the other, Rashi explains, it would have said each one only once. It would have said sokol o yora. So therefore, so now it's saying both. Now, Tosfos points out a point, by the way. Given that Sokol is first in the Pasuk, why are we doing it out of order? Why are we first pushing the guy off the platform and only then stoning him? Shouldn't we do it the other way around? So Tosfos says, because since we find other Pesukim that refer to stoning it right in connection with the death of Skaltim Ba'avonim V'Mesu, so therefore we understand that that has to be as close as possible to the death. So therefore we can't have, if they first pelt him with stones and then we're going to throw him off the cliff, means when we stoned him, he's still alive after all that. So therefore you don't have the skila itself is not as close as possible to the Misa, and therefore we don't want that. So even though the pasuk says sokol yisokol and then it says oyora yiyora, nevertheless that's the order. Nevertheless that's the order in which we do that. Another point as well. The Yad Ramah makes a point that what's the logic? First you're going to injure the guy. You're going to have, he's going to be bleeding all over the place from having been pelted with stones, and then we're going to take him to the actual base of Skilla and push him off. It's more likely, it's more logical to understand that the pushing comes first. Anyway, So therefore, so we learn from those psukim by Matan Torah that you have both of those things. How do we know that if he dies only from the fall, that's enough, and we don't need to then pelt him with stones? Therefore, the pasuk says, or he'll be pushed off. So meaning it's either one or the other. You have, by the way, machlokas in a few places in Shas between Rabbi Yoshi and Rabbi Yonason, when the Torah says two things tied together with a vav, does it mean both of them or does it mean one or the other? We're going to have that machlokas later on in our Masechta. So now, but if it says oi, everybody agrees it's one or the other. So here it's clear that it means they can do only the dechia, and then we're yotze with that. How do we know that the same thing applies in future generations as well? Maybe you'd say it's a one-time thing by Matan Torah. Therefore, you have the double expression, soko yisokel, meaning the Torah could have just said soko sokal, or yora yora yora, or whatever. And when it says in the future tense, yisokel and yiyora, then it means it's to be done in the future this way as well. So that's how we learn. That's how we learn that you have both. That's how we learn that the yora yora, the pushing off, comes first, and that if he dies from that, then we yotze. So the Mishnah continues.
Can we say since it was before Matan Torah, the commandment and the iser would be prolonged for a few days? So perhaps he was saying on the future of these few days, sokol yisokel.
No, because there'd be no reason to say that. Obviously, when it says that nobody is supposed to go up there, then it means, and the pasuk continues, when the shofar blows, then they can go back up to the mountain. So obviously, we understand that it means that during that time, it's off limits and that these punishments apply only during that time. There'd be no reason to say it, except for the fact that we're learning that it's going to be for future generations, that we learn from here for future generations as well. The Mishnah had said, Vim lav aid asheni neutral seven. We said if he didn't die from the fall, then the second aid takes a stone. So what do you mean the Gemara says neutral? He picks it up. V'hotani, we learned in a braiser of Shimon Elazar Omer, Evan hoisa shamasu shnei bnei odam. There was a stone there that was heavy enough that it took two people to lift it. So now he takes it and drops it on the guy's heart, on his chest, in mespa yotza. And if he dies with that, then we're yotza and we don't need anything else. So we see that we see Rav Shimon Elazar is saying it's a stone that it takes two people to lift. Whereas the word in the Mishnah, noital, suggests that only one person lifts it. So like Moses, what are you asking from the Braisa against the Mishnah? In the Braisa itself, you got to understand. What do you mean? It starts saying masiv shnei bnei adam. First, it's saying the stone is so heavy that it takes two people to lift, and then it says noitla v'nois na liboy, and then it says that he takes it and throws it on the guy's heart. So what is it? If it's heavy enough that it takes two people to lift, then he can't be noitla anyway. It should be saying noitlim v'nois nim. Ella, no. What it means is like this: demadli lo bahadi chavre. What he does is the two adam lift up the stone together. The shoddy lo ihu, but then you have only one of them drops it. The Rambam describes what you do is the two of them lift it, then one of them moves his hands out of the way, and therefore automatically, because it's too heavy for the other one, then he drops it. This way it will come with as much force as possible. Because like we were saying before, if it's two people, they might not coordinate well enough, and it's not going to be dropped with maximum force. So therefore you want it to drop from one person's hands so that it will fall with as much force as possible. And again, Misa Yafa, you want it to be much more likely to kill him. So according to Rashi, in other words, the word razia means koyach. Rashi translates mirazia mi koyach godo, with the maximum force. The Yad Rama gives a different explanation of it. He says the word razia, actually the word roza in Lashon Kodesh, and razia in Aramaic, he says means skinny or thin. So he has a different explanation. He says if we want is like this. If he's going to throw it, meaning like you throw a baseball or something, it may not go exactly where he expects it to. So it may not land squarely on the guy's chest. Instead, what we want is we want him to drop it. And that way, there's no koyach of his own going into it. So therefore, so it's weak in the sense that he's not putting extra koyach into it. He's just dropping it, and all that happens is gravity makes it fall. So therefore, it falls directly where it's supposed to. Again, as opposed to if the two of them were doing it together, then one of them is going to put a little spin on it, a little energy into it or something, and it may not fall exactly where it's supposed to. Next, the Mishnah had said, the Mishnah had said, if not, then everybody's stoned, everybody pelts him with stones. So the Gemara says, Valtani, Ma'olam Lashonah Ba'odam. We learn in a Braisa that nobody ever needed to repeat this. It was always the person would die from the first or the second part of the procedure. And the Gemara says, fine, Mikam Inna de Ovid. Is the Mishnah saying that they actually did that? All it's saying, Di Mitzrach Kam Inna. If it's necessary, then this is what we do. The Mishnah is not saying that it ever happened that they actually did that, but that's the official procedure includes this part. Okay, the Gemara says Omar Mar Evan Hoysechola. So now let's go back to we said that there was we explained in the Braisa that there was a stone that they would use to drop on him. So what do you now? The expression Evan Hoysa suggests that they actually had a stone prepared that Beis Din would use again and again for this purpose. They found a stone that's heavy enough that it takes two people to lift it, and now they would keep it in Beis Din together with their other equipment and use it wherever necessary. The problem is, Valtani, we learn in a Braisa, the mission is we're gonna learn later on in the parak that whatever it is, well, here we're saying that everything that was used to execute the person is buried with him. Achas Evan Shenitzkoba, whether the stone with which he was stoned, the Achas Eitz Shenitla Olav, or the beam of wood that his body is hanged on, whereas we're gonna learn in the next Mishnah that when a person is given skila, sometimes their body is hanged afterwards. We're gonna have a machlokas tanoyim on in what cases. Anyway, so that the echad sayif shenerag boy, or whether it's the sword with which his head was chopped off for hereg, the echad sudur shenechnak boy, or the scarf that was used to strangle him, kolam nikbar and imay, all of those things are buried are buried together with him. Because the idea is we don't want Rashi explains, we're going to learn later on in the parak, we're going to learn tomorrow, Best Hashem, we learn it from the fact that it says cover tikberenu, that it means that the extra tikberenu means that we also have to bury these things. And the reason behind it is you don't want people in the future to go and say, hey, there was the stone with which they killed Pliny, there was the beam they hanged Pliny on, etc. And it's going to be more of a bizarrion for him, so we don't want that. By the way, as we learned the other day, we're missing Sreifa over here. It didn't say anything about the hot lead. Tosfos pointed out over there because the hot lead, you can't say you bury it together with him. It went down his throat. But in any case, the point is, so all these things are buried together with the person each time. So they obviously can't have a stone that's used over and over for this purpose, because every time they would use a stone, they would bury it afterwards. The answer is Lloyd Stricha. Fine. What the Braisa means is it wants to tell us, the Braisa doesn't mean they use the same stone over and over again. It means that they always, it means they would each time they would have another one beforehand, before it comes to Skila, they would make sure they have a stone of the appropriate size and weight. Okay. Now, we said nikborin imoy. We said, what do you mean these things are buried with him? Valtanya ain't nikborin imoy. We learn another Braisa that says they're not buried together with him. It doesn't mean literally with him in the caver, but it means within his four amas. So we do want to bury them because it says kavur tikberenu, and because of this, we know the Eibishter has rachmanos on him, so there shouldn't be more of a bizoyan. But nevertheless, you don't bury other things together with the mess in the caver, so you bury them within four amas of him. Okay. Amar Shmuel. So now Shmuel says a din, nikta yada edim potter. If the Adam's hands were amputated, then the person is potter, and he doesn't get any, he's not executed by Beis Din. And my time to be in a, we said in the Mishnah, we quoted the pasuk Yada Adim. So to be in a Yada Adim Tia by Berishoina, you have to have that the hand of the Adim should be against him first to execute him. Veleka, and if the Adim are missing their hands, then they can't do that. So we're not going to say, in other words, now this is going to bring us into a discussion called Be'ina Krodichtiv. Do we have to have, when the Torah says details in a procedure, does it have to be, it has to be done that way? And if not, then you can't do it at all. Or is it maybe the Torah is saying this is normally how it's done, but if not, you could do it some other way? So it comes out that Shmuel is saying that no, you can't. That it has to be krok adichtiv, and therefore, if not, then it's no good. So the Gemara asks, "Elamai ata edim gidmin de meikra hachinami de psili." So by that logic, are you telling me if to begin with the edim are amputees to begin with, then to begin with, they can't say Eidos on him, and the apostle Eidos. And the point is, you never find anywhere, we learned in the third parak, we talked about all the various psule Eidos, nowhere ever does it suggest that if they're missing their hands, then they should be apostle Eidos. So the answer is shiny hosam da makra yad va edim shahisa kvar. Because the difference is Shmuel is saying it's not just because the pasuk says that the hand of the edim that the edim have to be the ones who are helping to execute him. Because since the pasuk says yad ha edim, that suggests shahisa kvar, the hand that they had at the time of the edus. So if to begin with they came as edim to Beis Din lacking their hands, fine, then that doesn't passel them as edim, and we say then it means that somebody else will deal with the pushing them off and the throwing the stone and so forth. But if they had a hand at the time, then the pasuk, by using the word yad ha edim, implies the same hand that they had at the time of the edus is still the one now that it's going to be used to execute them. In effect, Rashi says when they were amputees, when they first came to Beis Din, their hand is whatever they have, whatever they're using now to manipulate objects, the stump of their arm or whatever, that is in effect their yad, but it still has to be the same yad then as it is now. The Gemara says, Meisri, I have a contradiction. A Mishnah says in Masechta Makos, Kol Mokum Shiyidu Shnayim. Any place, meaning even in Chutz Laaretz, as long as when the Mishnah mentions over there that the concept of a Sanhedrin that can actually execute people applies in both Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laaretz. Smicha itself, as we learned in the first parak of our Masechta, has to be given in Eretz Yisrael, but once you have it based in Smuchin, then they can travel to Chutz Laaretz and set up shop there, and they can also be doing Mrs. based in. So a Mishnah describes there, a kol makom sheyidu shnayim, whenever you have anywhere in the world a based in, where two people come to Beis Din and give edus. The yom mi eden oni beish onu beish pliny shenigma b'dine be based in pliny. We give edus that pliny was convicted in such and such a Beis Din, or pliny or pliny edov, and that the edim were pliny and pliny. Harezi yahorig. Then the new Beis Din can execute him on the basis of that edus, even though they didn't hear all the evidence and they didn't know, etc. Because now they're being given reliable edus that this person is chayiv misa from this other Beis Din, then they can go ahead and carry out the sentence. Now, according to Shmuel, why should that work? We don't have the original edim on the spot. We're saying that the original edim, we don't know where they are. They may still be in Eretz Yisrael. They may have died or whatever. And now you have two new edim are coming and testifying that there was that gmar din from before. And we're saying that's good enough. So you don't have yad or edim. The answer is Tirgum of Shmuel, Behein Hein Edov. Shmuel says, fine, that is what the Mishnah is talking about, where it is, in fact, the same Edim. So they had testified.
Why do they have to say Edim?
Because they still have to come. Because it's not representative. Because if they're going to say Re'inu, then the new Beis Din has to interrogate them all over again. They're saying, at this point, there was already a Gemar Din in Beis Din, in a Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael. Now this guy has escaped to you to Chutz Laaretz. So we're coming to you, the Beis Din in Chutz Laaretz, and we're informing you that this guy was already convicted based on our own edus in that other Beis Din.
It's the
two Edim are coming and saying that the previous Beis Din convicted him. So they're giving.
To say that there was a Gmar Din according to their own Edus?
Yeah.
That means we're giving them Koyach that they can be Muzin.
No, because other Edim could still come and say Mono Yisim, but Mokum Ploini. You said that this guy was convicted in Beis Din, and you said this guy was convicted in Beis Din on Tuesday at Parshas Va'era, Parshas Boy, Tufshin Pehei in Yerushalayim, but on that date you were with us in New York. It's still a distracted Yochalazima. Keep in mind, when we say they're coming to Beis Din and saying, obviously it's not just Beis Din says, okay, well, you said so good, let's take the guy and execute him. Obviously, they have to cross-examine them about this new edus. So they're not cross-examining them about the original thing that they saw, that Reuven killed Shimon on such and such a date, but they're cross-examining them. So you say that Reuven was convicted in the Beis Din in Yerushalayim. So tell us, what year was it? What day was it? What day of the month, etc.? And they go through all of that. So in that case, then Tosfos Chachmei Anglia points out, according to Shmuel, you would also have to say that when they say Pliny Edov, that's just the style of the Mishnah, because normally when we mention a person having been convicted, then we mention the Beis Din and we mention the Edim. Here, according to Shmuel, it's the Edim themselves coming and saying they don't really need to say Pliny Edov. We say we're the Edim. So Shmuel explains the Mishnah that way. Fine. The question is, does that mean that Shmuel holds that always when the Torah gives details of a mitzvah, it has to be done exactly that way, and if you can't do it, then you don't do the mitzvah at all? V'atanya, we learn in a brisa, when the posuk says regarding a ritzeach, most yumas hamaka ritzeachu, he has to be put to death. The ritzeach has to be put to death because he's a murderer. Ainly other misak suvaboy. Now, if without that posuk, you would only know. If it only said Yumas, then you would think that he can only be executed with the particular Misa that applies to him, which, as we're going to learn in the next perek, is Hereg, is beheading. Minayin she'imati che'imi'iyata yochala Misa b'misak suhaboy. How do we know that if it's not possible to execute him with that particular Misa, sha'ata Misa b'chom Misa sha'ata yochala Misa, that you kill him any way you can? So to give an example that Amam describes, let's say the guy is running away, so you're not going to be able to chop off his head, so you shoot an arrow and you kill him. How do we know that you do that? Tamad lema, mois yumas hamaka mikom mokam. Therefore the passage is mois yumas hamaka, meaning regardless, you can kill him in any way. Once he was convicted, obviously. And in fact, yeah, Rabbeinu Hanano points out when we're mentioning an arrow over here, we think of it, shooting with an arrow is not even one of the four misses based in, and still they can do that. Anyway, the point is, if in Krok Dichtiv, we would have said that, look, the Pasuk says he has to get Hereg. You can't do Hereg because he's running away. Then that's it. You don't do anything. Like Shmuel had said about the Edim that were amputees. Why over here would Shmuel say that? So how does it? So, but here we're saying that you can do that. You don't need krok adichtiv. The answer is shiny hosam da amakrom mois yumas. Fine, precisely because the pasuk says mois yumas. Then if we have a special din over there that you don't need krok adichtiv. Well, the question is v'ligma minei. In that case, why don't we learn from that? Why don't we make a binyan av from that to the rest of the chayv and misses based in? And the answer is mishum dahavir ritzeach v'goyel adam shnei ksum aboyim ka'echad, because you have two psukim. You have two different dinim within a ritzeach, one about Beistin executing him, and the other about the goyel adam killing him. Where you have the same point made that you can kill them with any missa possible. And by the way, there is Tosfos actually learns in Makkos that with a Ritzeach, you can do anything even outside of the Arba Missus, as we're saying. By other Chayv and Missus based in, Tosfos learns you could, if necessary, if you can't do Skila, for example, then you're going to do something else. But it always has to be one of the four Missus based in. Only by Ritzeach and Goyel Adam are we saying that you have more leeway and it can be even outside of the four Missus based in.
Where's Goyel Adam coming to the picture?
We're going to explain that. We're going to bring a pasuk about Goyel Adam.
So we have
a ritzeach for Goyel Adam, shnei suba boim ka'achod. We have two psukim that we learn the exact same thing. They're the same concept that mois yumas means he can be killed in any way possible.
So the question of ligma minei would have been on what?
Would have been on the ritzeach, if on missus based in a ritzeach. If the Torah is telling us on the one hand a ritzeach needs hereg, on the other hand that mois yumas means any kind of way, including even with shooting an arrow or whatever, then why don't we do that from Binyan Av, from that to everywhere else in the Torah? And the answer is because you also have the same thing by Goyel Adam, so therefore you have Shnei Ksuma Boim Ka'echad, two psukim that teach us the exact same concept, V'chol Shnei Ksuma Boim Ka'echad Ein Melamdin. And when you have such a thing, you can't learn from it from other places, because as we learn throughout Shas, if you had only by one of them, then you would say it's a Binyan Av from there. But if you have two and the Torah didn't need to repeat it by the second one, because we could have learned it from that Binyan Av, then it's meant to be it's only those two and no more than that. Tosfos mentions, now there is an opinion elsewhere in Shas, I think Rabbi Yehuda, that says that you could. Shnei Ksuma Boim Ka'echad, he holds Melamdin. But you have also a third one by Irani Dachas, where also the people of an Irani Dachas, they're supposed to also be, they're also supposed to get Hereg, but they are also, if you can't, then you do it some other way. Anyway, therefore, so you have Shnei Ksuma Boim Ka'echad, v'chol Shnei Ksuma Boim Ka'echad ein Melamdin. Ritzeach hodam moran. Where do we see the ritzeach? We just said, because it says mois yumas. Goyel adam maihi. Where do we see this concept by goyel adam? D'tanya. When it says goyel, we learn in Hebrew. When it says in the pasuk goyel adam yomis eser ritzeach. When it says a person has killed, then the goyel adam can kill the ritzeach. Mitzvah b'goyel adam. That means there's a mitzvah of the goyel adam to kill this person who killed his relative, and goyel also in this case means primarily it means that it should be a relative How do we know if he doesn't have a relative, his closer relative? Now, you could have, in general, we learn, like we learn in Bava Basra, every person, every born yid has relatives, ultimately. The general rule is that Amram says the goyel for this purpose is who would ever be in position to yarshin him. So it conclude his children, it conclude his grandchildren, great grandchildren, whatever. It conclude, we're learning now in Rambam and Shlosha Perkim Hilchos Nachlas, it conclude his father, his father's brothers, whatever, whichever one is going to be in position to yarshin him is the goyel adam. Now, how do we know if he doesn't have a goyel? Which could be that the actual goyel himself is incapable of doing it, or you could have that the victim was a ger and he doesn't have any goyel. So how do we know she based in ma'amidin like goyel, but then based in appoints him a goyel adam? And the point, as we know, the goyel adam, the idea is if the guy leaves the Ore Miklat, so first the guy has to run to the Ore Miklat as fast as possible because the goyel adam is hot on his trail. And if he makes it safely to the Ore Miklat, then he has to stay there. And otherwise, if he goes out, then he's susceptible to the goyel adam. So how do we know that? That there's always going to be a goyel adam and based in appoints one if necessary. Because the pasuk says when he encounters him, meaning anybody it is. So regardless, whoever it is. So therefore, but it also means that goyel adam can kill him in whatever way that he can. He meets him, he finds him outside the Ore Miklat. He doesn't dafka have to do hereg. He can do whatever method he wants. So again, we have Shnei Ksuma, Boim Kachad. We have two times when it comes to this matter of Eretzeach, one by Bastin executing him, and the other by the Goyel Adam killing him. And we see in both cases it can be with any kind of Misa. So therefore, that's Shnei Ksuma, Boim Kachad. But other than that, we need Kroka Dichtiv. Otherwise, it has to be the Pasuk says this is the detail how it has to be. And therefore, if it can't be done, then this brings us back to Shmuel's point before that if the Edom's hands were amputated between the Edus and the Mrs. Bastian, then they can't do it anymore. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Omalei makshisha.
And were amputated by mitzvah space.
No. What we're saying is, if the Edom to begin with were amputees when they came to Beis Din to give the Edos, then fine, that doesn't pass all their Edos. Right. We're not going to be able to do Yada Edom. Okay, whatever hand they had then is what they'll do. The Orach HaNer says, in fact, fine. So in that case, if they have to use the stump of their arm to do the Misa, then that's how we'll do. We're not going to say that it has to be Dafka Yad, that has to be a hand. Whatever functions for them as a Yad is going to work. But here what we're saying is, at the time of the Edus, they had a normal hand. Now, after that, it got amputated. Now Shmuel is saying, we can't anymore. We can't give him Misa Space Din, and therefore he's Potter, because you don't have the Yad HaEdim. So in other words, we're saying basically, the posik has to be accomplished the way it says. It says in the posik yad ha'edim, and you don't have the yad that they had before. But on the other hand, we're saying by Ritzeach and a goyel adam are an exception to that rule, where there it can be even, it doesn't have to be krok adichtiv, because the posik says by both of them that they can be killed in any way. But the Gemara continues. So you're telling me that we're saying in the Gemara that it sounds like we need krokadichtiv, and we're saying that and we're saying that with the exception of where the Torah says otherwise. But is that in fact a fact that we require or don't require? Meaning, in other words, the Yad Ramah teaches out. He's not actually asking on the previous piece of Gemara. He's just saying, by the way, is there anybody who holds? You're telling me that Shmuel holds, but in Krokodichtiv, is there actually anybody who holds differently? So now we learn in a Mishnah, Hoya Echad Mehem Gidim, when it comes to the parents of a Ben Sura Ramoda, Hoya Echad Mehem Gidim, we're going to learn about Ben Sura Ramoda in detail later in our Masechta. If one of the parents was an amputee, or had his hand amputated, or Ilim, or was mute, or Chigur, or lame, or Sumer, or blind, or Cheresh, or deaf, Ein Anasa, Ben Sura Ramoda, their son cannot become And then so remota, Shinema, because the Pasuk is Vesof Suvoy, the Pasuk says that they should grab a hold of him, which implies Vole Gidmin, so they can't be amputees, because then they can't grab him with their hand. Vahitsiuoy, say when it says they should bring him out to Beis Din, implies Vole Shigrin, they can't be lame. Vomru, when it says they say to the Beis Din, Vole Ilman, so they can't be mute. Bnei Zer, when they say, this our son, meaning Marabet's boy, they're able to point to him and say, this is our son. Vole Suman, so they can't be blind, because then they wouldn't be able to say Zer. And the pasuk continues, he doesn't listen to our voice, implying, so they can't be deaf, because if they're deaf, they don't know whether he's listening to their voice. So we see, therefore, bitten in krokodichtiv. So again, the question is, so why was the Gemara asking before whether Shmuel holds bitten in krokodichtiv as if it's possible the other way around? But we see clearly from this case of Ben Sora Ramota that you definitely do need. In fact, there's an explanation from the Mishnah Rishona, from the Mishnah Achrona, one of the Mephoreshim on the Mishnah, that says, then why did Shmuel even need to tell us about the Edim and their hands based on this Mishnah with the Ben Sora murder? It's obvious that in Kroka Dechtiv, and Shmuel didn't even need to tell us. The answer is shiny hosam to call it kro yaseira. So therefore, my timer, why would that be la mishum de in kro kedichtiv? Wouldn't it be because we have to fulfill the pasuk literally as it says? The pasuk says that they have to be able to grab a hold of him and walk him to Beis Din, etc. And therefore, we see you have all these details. So the answer is like shiny hosam to call it kro yaseira. Look over there, the whole pasuk is extra. Why did the pasuk even need to say? It could have just said that the pasuk doesn't have to say they grab a hold of him and they go to Beis Din and they make a speech, etc. It could have just said they bring him to Beis Din and Beis Din executes him. So therefore, the whole pasuk is extra. So you can say there you have a specific thing that Britain and Krokodich did. That doesn't mean necessarily that we should that would apply to other cases. I did once see a drush on this that we're going to talk again. We're going to talk more extensively later in the Masechta about the Ben Sora Ramota. We're talking about that here. You know, he goes and steals money and he buys food, etc. He's going to go worse and worse, and therefore we execute him before he becomes that bad. But we have to consider: is there anything in his chinuch that might have made him more susceptible to this? Where therefore we should say, well, in that case, how can we put the blame exclusively on him? We have to try to work with him and correct him. So if we find that the parents are that if parents are ilmim, for example, meaning in the drasha, they never spoke to him as to give him musar in life, or they're sumim, they're blind, and they turn a blind eye to what he's doing, etc., and all these various things, then he can't hold him exclusively responsible for having become a ben sorimar. So it's a drasha, a musar dika drasha based on this price. All right, the Gemara continues. Toshma. Let's bring another proof. We learn at the end of the Masechta, we're going to learn about the dinim of an Irani Dachas, and the Mishnah says over there, Ein lo rechov. Now the Mishnah, the Pasuk says that you have to gather all the spoils, all the property of the city, el toich rechova, into the main city square, and then you burn it. So the Mishnah says, Ein lo rechov, if the city doesn't have a square, Ein nasis Irani Dachas divi Rabbi Shmuel. Then Rabbi Shmuel says it can't become an Irani Dachas. Rabbi Akiva says no problem. Ein lo rechov, oisin lo rechov. If it doesn't have a city square, then we make one now on the spot. Ad kan le pligi el de mar sova rechov de meikur ba'inan or mar sova rechov de hashta nami kedu meikur domi. Now the machloika seems to be just Rabbi Shmuel holds the word rechov means the rechov that it already had. And Rabbi Akiva is saying that even if you have a new, a freshly made rechov, then it's considered as if it had been there all along and it's good enough, and we're mekayim rechov with it. It sounds like they both agree with the basic concept that in krokodichtiv. So therefore, so you see that everybody holds that in krokodichtiv. So again, why does Shmuel have to phrase it in such a way as though this is a chiddush? The answer is the Gemara says you should know tanoi. It's actually a machloikas tanoim whether be'in and krokodichtiv. So therefore, it is a chiddush for Shmuel to tell us that in fact he holds that way. The Tanan, we learn in connection with a mitzora. Now we know a mitzora when he's going through his process of tara, his korbanos are brought, and then you have the blood of one of his korbanos, the osham, has to be applied to his earlobe. And his thumb and his right earlobe and his right thumb and his right big toe, and then they take the oil that he brings with his korban, and the kohen applies it over there as well. So now, what happens? The Mishnah describes Tanan ain like boyin yod boyin regal oizin yamonis. If he doesn't have a right thumb or a right big toe or a right earlobe, Ain like Taroi Lomas, then he can never become Tahor, because then the Kohen can't place the blood or the oil where they're supposed to be. Rabbi Eliezer Oimer, Noisin Amakoyim, Rabbi Yotzer. Rabbi Eliezer says, no problem, just put it where the thumb or the toe or whatever was supposed to have been. Rabbi Shimon, Amaf, Noisin Al Smoil, Rabbi Yotzer. And Rabbi Shimon says, you can put it on his left earlobe or left thumb or whatever, and you're still Yotzer. So we see, in other words, the Tanakhama holds, but in Kroka Dichtiv, and therefore, you can't do Kroka Dichtiv, you can't do the thing at all, as opposed to, according to Rabbi Eliezer, and according to Rabbi Shimon, you don't need Kroka Dichtiv, because instead you can do it otherwise. Now, Tosfos points out, first of all, we have to be talking about, again, similar to what Shmuel was saying about the Edim, where the thumb or the toe was amputated afterwards, after he first became Tomei. If it was beforehand, then listen, the same way as Shmuel said, Yad or Edim can mean whatever serves them as a hand, the same way now we could say that Bohen Yod refers to, will still, whatever it is that serves him in place of a thumb. So that's Tosfos says that. I don't think all the Rishonim agree with that. But then Tosfos also asks, what do you mean? How does this have to do? But in Kroka Dichtiv, the Pasuk says by Metzora, Zois Tia Torah Samatzora, and from that we learn that the details by Metzora are ma'akev in a way that you don't find necessarily by other mitzvahs. Whenever it says by mitzvah, Zois Torah means exactly as written. So maybe only by the Metzora do you need exactly as written according to the Tanakhama. How do we know that applies in other cases, as well? So that's Tosfos' question, but the Mishnah Achrona says, I don't even understand the question. Yeah, you know why. The Tanakhama holds because of Tia. When we're saying, on the other hand, we're saying that we said before, Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva hold Kroka Dichtiv, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Lozer and Rabbi Shimon hold that you don't need Kroka Dichtiv. But they would hold, even though it says Tia, it doesn't make a difference. Where the Tanakhama would hold that you need Kroka Dichtiv in general, and here by the Metzora, it says Tia, and that stresses that point, and that stresses that point as well. Okay, the bottom line is, there is a machlokas tanoim, whether be'in and kroka dichtiv. So what Shmuel is telling us, that if the Edom's hands were amputated, not everyone would agree to that. The Tanakhama of that Braisa, of that Mishnah, about the Metzora, would hold that, but Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Shimon might well disagree and say that even if the thumb was amputated afterwards, nevertheless, noisin amakoimoi, or noisin al-smoil, the same way they might say if the Edom can't accomplish the Yad Edom, then it doesn't matter, the guy gets mitzvah-based in anyhow, and other people do it instead of the Edom. The halacha is like the Chachamim as far as the Metzora, and the halacha is also like Shmuel as far as the Edim over here.